You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Okay. Was that really necessary?
It most certainly was. I played that on purpose.
And why? Why did we do that?
Because the former 14-story complex came crumbling down into a pile of concrete, rebar, other stuff, and let's not forget the dust.
Did you see
the implosion over the weekend near the plaza?
If you missed it, I sort of wish we had packed a picnic up, gone over somewhere over by the Mill Creek Park, and just let's take a look at it.
Made because a day of it.
You could hear that thing for miles. And if you guys have never watched an implosion, like a beautifully choreographed implosion where everything has to be done and set just right.
And let's not forget the dust.
So the building then collapses in and on itself.
Yeah,
there are only a handful of companies around the country that do it, to do it correctly. And yeah, the Embassy Suites on the plaza is no more.
I heard it.
Just like 2 years ago when they dropped the old Ridenour Baker grocery store down in the West Bottoms.
2 seconds, it's gone. Did you hear it?
I heard it. I saw the dust cloud. I did not see the building topple in on itself. And man, I wish I had known beforehand because I would have done the same thing. I'd have been in Mill Creek Park.
It's pretty cool.
I'd have had a, you know, picnic basket with me, some sandwiches. It would have been a day.
What's crazy is the delay because I've seen a couple of these live. You hear this bump, 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 bump. And then it goes like 1/1000, 2/1000, and then the entire thing just drops straight down.
And there's not a lot of room around that building for error.
No, there is not.
I mean, if any of that debris pushes out, we're damaging something else nearby.
Nope. It comes straight down for a reason. We are efforting getting our good friend Kathy Nelson on the program this afternoon to do a sort of post-mortem on the month that was World Cup.
Maybe she's taking a nap.
I asked her, please tell me you're all on vacation for the next month. And they had another big sports announcement today, so they are not on vacation. But I said, we'd kind of like final numbers when you have them. And I know that they're still tallying some of those. Fan Fest, if you never made it out, is no more. And I saw this on the socials over the weekend. People were saying, why not keep it open another couple of weeks so that we can all have a place to gather to watch the final?
There are places around town to watch tomorrow's match, Wednesday's
match, of course,
the third place match on Saturday.
So there's four more? Four more.
The reality is you would only have had to have extended it 8 days. Eight days. And from what I remember, most of the people that were working it were volunteers, were they not?
Bingo. You hit the nail on the head. People were saying, why? And then I read some of the comments, and every one of them were very nice, very lovely. But uniformly, people said the same thing. We have been volunteering at FanFest for the past 30 days.
Right.
And quite frankly, the volunteers are exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
It did not even occur to me, you guys. And I know that we had staff out there and we had security out there. Mm-hmm. But really what made that thing go so well were the volunteers. There had to have been thousands of them. They are exhausted.
They are exhausted. Everyone that I came across and ran into and had the opportunity, I thank them for being out there. And I mean, there was somebody, I stepped off the streetcar on Saturday.
Yeah.
And there was one person there, a volunteer holding a sign.
Just to direct you to where you're going.
That said, I speak Portuguese. You know, so many specific different jobs for these volunteers throughout this entire thing. And they were every, I don't know, 15, 20 yards and always ready to help inside and outside the fan festival. Yeah, they did a bang up job.
Couple of stories real quick, Sam, that I've seen and I want you to weigh in. From international friends and journalists who came in to Kansas City for the first time, but then also saw other airports, other fan fests, other matches. If you missed the story in the New York Times, they are calling us, hands down, there is no close second place. We are the darling of the World Cup, period. They interviewed a journalist, Sam, who went to all of the different matches, has covered all of this around the world. And you know what he said? There were little details here that when, you know, individually might not seem like that big of a deal, like someone holding a sign that says, I speak Portuguese when you're coming off the bus. He said that we did not see in the other big cities, maybe who are, they're used to having these big events and they think that they know what they're doing. And maybe they do. Kansas City did it above and beyond better than anybody else, right down to the fact that when a specific match was being played here, did you notice at the airport over the men and women's restroom signs, they superimposed the jerseys of the visiting teams over the male restroom little caricature and the female restroom little?
Nice touch.
Who thought about that?
They even had big old buckets of like little stress ball soccer balls and some other stuff with some Chiefs cheerleaders hanging around. The lead singer for the All-American Rejects was raving about how cool our airport looked all decked out in World Cup gear. But with regard to keeping FanFest open one more week, if you plan in advance for the FanFest to run the entire duration and people know what they're signing up for, it kind of takes away that the volunteers are tired argument.
Yeah.
You plan for it. You get more volunteers. And maybe if they volunteered and they worked every single FanFest day, I couldn't imagine being out there for 10, 12 hours, 17 days over the last few months. I'd be dead too. But
and let's not forget all of the local food and drink vendors that were there at the fan festival.
Of course. And
almost
look,
the majority of the food vendors were local.
I don't fault anyone for shutting that down when we were done with the last match here. I just don't. I think we did this so well. But the hours and thousands of hours of blood, sweat, and tears and advance planning and on the ground planning and all of the different agencies involved and the volunteers. Let's call this what it was. It was a huge win, and we can all go to a bar and watch the other matches. And speaking of our international friends, we happened to drive out to Leawood for, 30 minutes on Sunday.
Okay.
We had something to pick up at Dick's Sporting Goods. We parked my car, got out, and I looked to my left, and there happened to be a man wearing an Argentina jersey sitting in that car. I turned into a crazy person, and I just go, hi, hi.
Oh, my God.
And I waved, hi. And we're walking away. The guy looks at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, welcome to Kansas City.
And he actually lives there.
Johnny looks at me and he goes, Dana, that guy's probably from Lee's Summit and is looking at you like you're absolutely crazy.
Welcome to our town.
We love Lionel Messi. I call him Lionel now. Didn't know what a great talent you guys have.
One thing I thought about over the weekend.
He didn't even roll down his window and say hi back.
After going down to Union Station and seeing all the really cool setup they had inside Union Station.
Oh, the entrepreneur area.
With all the local boutique shops and all that, I started thinking, you know what? There's going to be a lot of shops around town that will still have World Cup souvenirs and paraphernalia and that they would probably like to sell. So if you missed an opportunity before, while the World Cup was happening here, you can probably still go to a lot of these places and buy stuff.
Oh, let me tell you
Welcome
this.
Welcome to our country. Thank you. I'm from New York.
Yeah, the guy, now, in fairness, he had a Florida license plate, which said to me this is a rental car that he came over from Argentina and needed transportation. But again, he was tired too. He was probably like, you know, I don't want to talk to another American. So you're cool.
He was backing away slowly.
He was
slowly. Not break eye contact.
I'm like,
who is this woman?
It's someone from Argentina.
She swears she's not crazy.
Oh, my goodness, you guys.
That's one of the things that you will notice if you're around a lot of the Argentinian fans, like down at Fan Festival, is that they're a huge team. It's like people wearing Chiefs gear in Oregon.
I told you once,
Florida.
I ran into a guy wearing it was some sort of Chiefs jersey when we were on vacation way far from here. It was about a year ago, year and a half ago. And I went up to say hi, and I go, oh, my gosh, Chiefs, you Chiefs fan? Oh, it was at a fan fest. It was at a fan fest before the Super Bowl. He looked at me like I was crazy. He was like, no. I mean, he just didn't want to engage, whatever. Right. I'm like, well, you're wearing the jersey. I'm from Kansas City. I'm sorry. I'm in Vegas. And I thought, you know, maybe we have this thing in common. Again, the guy looked at me like I'm crazy.
Have you thought maybe it's you?
I think the common thread, Sam, if we're being honest.
Why is she waving so aggressively?
Leave me alone.
And we don't talk the sports ball on this station, but from a soccer perspective, oh. I'd just like to say that I'm so happy that we expanded the World Cup so that we could get the four best teams who were already predicted to be in the final, the last four teams.
I don't have a problem with that,
All
Sam.
All number one seeds. What are we doing?
To the winner, go the spoils.
What are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have a lot.
Well, you don't want to manipulate the thing, do you?
We have a lot in this. No, we do not, Dan. A lot in the stack today. We have got to talk about the flooding over the weekend. My God, did you see the families on their roofs? The Missouri National Guard stepping in to save so many people. What the heck?
The Highway Patrol rescue boat couldn't handle the water.
Yeah, they got tipped over. Mm-hmm. Everybody's fine. Pentagon, if you missed it, has released a new batch of UFO files. That is in our stack today. We are actually going to start where we left off on Friday, right before Festivus. We got word that the Kansas Board of Healing Arts has stepped in and a local nurse has lost her license for using the old prescription pad to prescribe narcotics. And I want to talk to my healthcare providers this hour. I said to Sam before we went to break and wrapped the show last week, one of the reasons Cerner stepped in to save the world was because the prescription pad, we're sort of past that.
Yeah.
You couldn't read the doctor's notes. There's a reason we have now electronically centralized medical records. And I'm going to tell you how this local nurse got caught and then ask, who still uses a prescription pad?
Because does that not raise red flags?
To me, just having a prescription pad is what would open the door to fraud. I'm not saying if you are a clinician and you have the pad, you're going to commit fraud. But having one laying around, that's what led to this. And we'll talk about it straight ahead on Dana and Parks. 913-586-7798. We're back after this. .9999999% of clinicians are good at what they do. They are in it to heal, to help, not to help themselves. But every once in a while, we have a story where someone does something really wrong, and I mean really, really wrong, and then that raises questions like, how did we not catch this sooner? How was this even allowed to happen? I'm going to tell you what happened, and then we have all kinds of questions. If you are in nursing or you work in a hospital, you don't have to use your real name, 913-586-7798. On the Missouri side, a woman named Brooke Haller has lost her license and is now banned for life after forging opioid prescriptions. We'll get to the addiction arm of this story in a little bit. We're going to start with what she did.
And by the way, this wasn't like years ago when the whole Sackler family scheme was going on. This was recent.
Very recent. So this is all over the news. You can find it. Channel 5 has it. Channel 4 has it. 9 has it. A Kansas City nurse forged opioid prescriptions, got caught, and is now banned for life from federally funded hospitals. 41-year-old Brooke Haller pleaded guilty to a single count of possession of a controlled substance by deception and subterfuge, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. She had previously worked as a registered nurse at a hospital in KCK. That narrows it down. Prosecutors say she used her position to steal a nurse practitioner's prescription pad and DEA number. Starting in March of 2024, authorities say that Haller used that stolen information to then begin writing forged prescriptions for Percocet and oxycodone, listing her relatives' names on the prescriptions.
Oh.
Prosecutors said Haller would fill the prescriptions all over town, both in Kansas and in Missouri. Here's where she got caught. This had been going on for a while, and let me tell you why. They accuse her of fraudulently obtaining 1,890 oxycodone. Let's say that you get those in, what, 30 pill?
That's a great question.
They're not going to prescribe you 1,000 oxy pills, right?
I can't imagine they would do anything over 30. They tried to give me 30 for my wisdom teeth.
So think about like all of the different prescriptions that would have to be fraudulently written to reach the number 1,890. She's also accused of ripping off 90 Percocet tablets. Here's how they say she got caught, but I'd love to know more. Investigators say the scheme unraveled in October of 2024 when one pharmacist called the hospital to verify an oxycodone prescription allegedly written by this nurse practitioner who had her pad stolen, right? The nurse practitioner called the pharmacy back and said to investigators, I only write electronic prescriptions. I have never spoken to this person, Haller, or given her access to my prescription pad or my DEA number. When Haller realized investigators were closing in, prosecutors say, she then tried to cover her tracks. Court records show, this is desperation, folks. She called the hospital multiple times, pretending to be a pharmacy employee and claiming the prescription questions they made were in error. So that she calls the hospital and says, hi, this is the pharmacist from CVS, Dr.
Pharmacy
Smith. And that call earlier, please. Our bad. Turns out this was just a mix-up in communication. Never mind. You know,
yeah.
What are you doing, woman?
She was spiraling. And by the way,
she used vocal disguises and spoofed the pharmacy's phone number, including posing as a man named Peter, but staff recognized her voice.
Hi, I'm Peter. Totally not your coworker. My name's Peter. Federal law cuts the single prescription limit at a 30-day supply.
Okay.
Ever since the old opioid
crisis. So the whole 1,890.
Yeah.
The reason I bring that up is because all of that had to be filled before one pharmacy picked up the phone and said,
You sure about that?
And we don't know why. Was it, we've seen a lot of oxy coming from this DEA number.
Right.
Do pharmacies have access to the DEA numbers so that you can see?
And if she was using her family members, why did they all have the same last name? This whole family is on oxy.
Correct. And then here's another question. Would it seem odd to any pharmacist that this particular doctor, the nurse practitioner, let's say she was in labor and delivery. We don't know what her,
not a lot of oxy's prescribed in labor and delivery.
I mean, let's just say, I don't care what she practiced. Was it that pharmacy finally looked under this doctor's name and went, we are getting a lot of oxy prescriptions from this one physician where maybe a year ago we had not had any and something seems odd. So total props to the pharmacy for catching it.
It also could have been a situation where she's using the paper prescription pad to get around the system, but then once she goes to the pharmacy, are they uploading it into the digital system?
Right.
That's igniting a red flag.
That's another question I have.
The other pharmacies saying this particular DEA number has prescribed X number of
oxy. When was the last time any of you listening had a physical prescription ripped off of a pad and handed it to you? The only time I can ever remember that happening was they wrote down some sort of like topical cream that I needed for my plastics allergy.
Yeah.
And they're like, you can just get it at CVS. This is the name of it. They wrote it down on this little pad and handed it to me. I don't think anyone uses the physical paper anymore, but maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, there's numbers on it.
U.S. Attorney Ryan Kriegshauser says that this case reflects a troubling trend. He says, unfortunately, cases involving healthcare workers gaining unauthorized access to prescription narcotics are becoming more common. These are professionals who spent years studying and building their careers to throw it all away, usually because of addiction. Healthcare professionals facing addiction need to seek help before it's too late. Otherwise, we have to step in and make sure they are stopped. This brings me to my final question. If you have worked with someone who had an addiction problem, I can certainly see where it would be very hard for a nurse or a doctor to raise their hand and say, I'm in over my head, I need help, for fear that you will be fired at that point, for fear that you will be restricted in your practice. Like, if you do need help, clearly this woman did.
What did she plead to again?
One count, Sam. She got 3 years probation and a $5,000 fine.
Which is criminal in and of itself.
Correct.
But why are they assuming that she was taking all of these pills?
I don't know.
And that's a lot of oxys to be taking yourself.
We are not privy to that information, what she was doing with them once they just mentioned addiction.
I'd be looking at other things.
Yep. 913-586-7798. 913-586-7798.
We'll take it. How many doctors are still using prescription pads? We'll tell you.
I want to know when we get back, and then please call us if you work in this industry. The addiction rate in the normal general public, no matter what you do for a job, is essentially the same percentage within every job, is it not? If the addiction rate is 6% to narcotics,
right?
Does it not go to flow that in 6% of the overall medical community, someone is going to be struggling with addiction?
Yeah.
We'll take your call straight ahead. So real quick, this was a medical professional that, if you look this individual up, the person locally with the same name has been in the healthcare for 15 years. They have worked in emergency services. They have worked in ICU. They worked
as a lot of prescriptions in those two.
Educational specialists and outreach coordinator for a trauma department.
Okay.
And claimed they are finishing their dual masters for organizational leadership and healthcare service administrations. And I point that out because it's at some point along this woman's lengthy career, and I'm guessing for many years, brilliant career.
Right.
She is moving her way up. She is doing well. Then what happens that you are now using a voice disguiser to claim you're a dude named Peter
Didn't
really mean, you know, she was so far gone at that point. He mentions addiction. I think there is an addiction component. I don't know that all 1,900 pills were for her. That seems like a lot, but we don't know. That information's not in the indictment.
And if it was an addiction, wouldn't she be more likely to just go for the sample side of it? I mean, I don't know how they control oxys if they do have oxy samples.
I bet they control it like you would not believe, because that's a Schedule One, Sam.
So I looked it up, and anywhere from 92 to 93% of all prescribers in the U.S. have switched over to the electronic e-prescribing system.
Okay.
However, that leaves 7 to 8% that still rely on traditional paper pads. However, even with the 92% that have switched over, they are still encouraged and in some hospitals required to keep a paper prescription pad in their drawer. One, if the system goes down. Two, for secondary checks and measures. So it says here, for controlled substance mandates, using the electronic system is heavily mandated, but system bugs or temporary verification failures for heavy-duty medication sometimes require a specialized tamper-resistant paper backup. And the other, of course, for home visits or off-site care, which I'm sure happens a lot in the elderly environment, the elderly community. You go to a house, take care of a patient, and you need to write them a prescription to up their pain meds. You just go right there to your prescription pad. I got one for, it was on a piece of paper. I went to the derm, 2 years ago now.
Okay.
And I needed something for something. And she wrote me a piece of paper, and I literally had to call around to different pharmacies to see who had this particular medication in stock and how long it was going to take them to get it in stock. And Textline points that out. They prefer paper prescription pads because that means they can say, well, and I'm just using arbitrary companies here, CVS wants to charge $800 for this prescription, but
right,
Walgreens wants to charge $60. Well, I'm going to go to Walgreens,
okay,
whereas my doctor would typically just call the same pharmacy.
So
I've been
you
using
can price compare.
Right.
Okay.
You can shop a little bit.
The paper prescription for price comparing, I understand. The other thing I don't understand is with the physical paper pad, those so easily can be manipulated online. You don't even have to steal, in this case, her entire pad.
Out of her desk. Yeah, you make one.
Yes. Yeah. And to me, with respect to fraud, that is something. You had asked Sam about the penalty here, which I do not understand.
Why do we let someone commit a crime for years on end over and over and over again and then charge them with one count so they get probation?
It drives me crazy. They're saying what she did was not a victimless crime. She took advantage of a system intending to assist patients. DEA investigators put the case together. All this stuff. It was copious amounts of fraud she committed. And then the last sentence blows my mind. As a result, she will no longer be allowed to practice in Kansas.
In Kansas.
Okay. Does that mean theoretically she could just cross over into the state line?
In theory, if she could go over and get licensed in Missouri and get approval by the state board, I would say yes. Do they communicate across state lines?
I don't know the answer to that.
We've seen story after story about people that get hired from out of state
and
we find out that they were fraudsters in that specific industry. I think it was a Topeka hospital that hired some high-level C-suite position, and it turned out that he lost his last job because of fraud.
913-586-7798. Probation and a fine. A $5,000 fine, which I'm guessing she can't pay.
And again, nothing indicating it, but where were these pills going? I don't think she was taking all of them.
From KSDK, we would be remiss if we did not mention the flooding over the weekend. My God, if you have not seen the video, it is shocking in a word, in a world where the word shocking is overused, in my opinion. A foot of rain ripped through homes, cars, and a camper community in Lesterville. And Governor Mike Kehoe is now weighing in about recovery efforts. Historic rainfall dropped 12 inches of rain in 12 hours, causing the Black River to overflow its banks and wash away homes across Reynolds, Iron, and Crawford counties on the Missouri side. The governor toured the destruction on the ground and by air over the weekend, 24 hours after officially declaring a state of emergency. Quoting here, the amount of rain that we saw through the valley in this short period, I don't know if it's historic, but it's certainly something we have not seen in a very long time. The catastrophic flash flooding tore through the Hammerville campground in Lesterville. Did you guys see this? It washed out entire roads. It washed out. Bridges are just gone. That's how much rain we're talking about.
Well, and I think that campground was one where they had a building collapse and get washed away.
Yes.
And they had to rescue the folks out of the water. And I do believe they found all of them.
My God. Quoting here from Nancy Dotson, who lives on the campground, the worst was watching it go. You come back and everything is just gone.
Yeah.
The force of the water left cars mangled, pushed high into trees, flipped campers, threw entire structures across property lines. This car and shed, she says, don't belong to us. This belongs across the road, two doors up. National Guard, by the way, had to airlift more than 200 survivors. Do we know, is there anyone missing at this point? This story doesn't say, Sam. It will be a miracle. I think I saw that one woman who was, her entire home was washed away.
Yeah.
They did find her deceased over the weekend.
This, by the way, on the southern end of the Mark Twain National Forest.
My God. Yeah, it was, you know, far, not super close to the Kansas City area, but it's probably on a lot of your social feeds because it's Missouri and there's just nothing left where that water went through.
No matter how far it was, it's still devastating.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
That's nowhere near Kansas City. I'm like, go look at the video, my God.
One person dead, more than 200 campers rescued.
200 campers rescued. The one woman I saw, she was in her home, and, you know, the water was up to the roof lines, to over the roofs of those homes. Her entire house just washed away. Terribly sad stuff over the weekend. 913-586-7798. You are listening to Dana and Parks. We got a Parent of the Year award here on Dana and Parks today. And they are going to get time for this. This happened in Salina. A mother and father are accused of leaving their 6 children in the car outside of a restaurant on one of the hottest days of the year in that area.
They went in to eat? Or did they go in to grab food?
I have to have more information on this.
Because if they went in to grab some carry out.
Sam, it was 30 minutes.
Mm.
Still not okay.
No,
not okay for 5 minutes.
Definitely not okay.
The Salina Police Department said officers responded to the call around 2 o'clock regarding children being left alone in a vehicle with one window cracked. Police say the kids were in the car between 20 and 30 minutes. When officers responded to the scene, the outside temperature was 100 degrees. So we know the inside temperature in 10 minutes. My Tesla last week was 143 degrees inside.
Yeah, it hits 140 within a few minutes.
Both have been arrested on 6 counts of aggravated child endangerment.
Good.
Unbelievable. All 6 children, ranging in age from 7 months old to 13 years old, were taken into protective custody. I'm guessing the kids were also taken to the hospital, especially the 7-month-old. A child's body temperature rises 3 to 5 times faster than adults. They do not have the same regulating capabilities that an adult does. And I don't know why, like you, Sam, I wanted to know, where was this? It just says a restaurant. I want to know. It doesn't matter if you ran in to grab carryout and there's a delay. It's 100 degrees out. You cannot leave pets or children in a car, period.
And if there's a delay in grabbing the carryout, go out and hang out with the kids, open the doors, let them out.
6 kids
in a car. Sounds like I'm talking about a dog.
Like, what are you doing?
Now, I do have a question, though.
Yeah.
We bring up these stories all the time.
I know.
Most of them tragic, most of them fatal. And your typical MO is that we shouldn't charge the family.
I always say no charges.
So now, because it didn't end up fatal, we should charge them?
No. The difference is these parents knowingly, wantonly went into a restaurant for 30 minutes while the children were outside.
Instead of the accidental, I thought I took
them
to daycare.
Oh, my God. The case last week, I cannot get that out of my head with that poor dad. I just, oh. Because in those cases, Sam, to me, there's nothing you're going to do to that parent that is going to be worse than the guilt and the anguish they face for the rest of their lives. There have been parents in that case who beg police, just kill me. Just kill me. When that discovery is made, right? This is something totally different. These people are idiots. They should go to jail.
Well, they definitely deserve to be charged, yeah.
Let's get a Siders family update before we go to the break.
Speaking of treating children horribly.
Yeah, this is going to make people mad, though. Following the removal of 16 children from the Siders family home in Ohio last week, one relative said he was under the impression that some, if not all, of the victims were homeschooled. Now, I will remind you, when those 16 kids were taken out of that home, many of them had to be hospitalized. Some could not speak. They were not communicative. The 18-year-old does not know how to write her name. She cannot write. She cannot read or write. So these children were not homeschooled. They were kept in squalor for all of those years.
Right.
So as much as I hate even bringing this up about homeschooling, even one lawmaker says the word homeschooling here is a stretch at best. I think to insinuate that these kids had any education in any manner is a false narrative.
Well, and they're saying they need to take a second look at the homeschooling system just because there was a horrible group of people that had 16 children and didn't take care of them appropriately doesn't mean the whole system is flawed.
We might bring this up a little later in the show. Teachers, as you know, in traditional school settings are mandatory reporters. There is no question if a teacher had noticed the condition of these children with the bug bites and the just awful conditions, the teachers would have alerted authorities, right? Likewise, Ohio once had many more verification requirements for homeschooling. They used to just say, look, I'm gonna homeschool my kids, and that was it, basically. Now, before, you had to at least show some sort of curriculum, show some sort of progress.
Like, most states have requirements where they have to take tests from time to time to make sure that they're keeping up with their grade level.
They're simply saying in this case, there should be some, not zero, oversight. And I know we have people who homeschool their children that are smarter than any in-school, traditionally schooled child. I mean, some of these homeschooled kids go on to the Ivy League.
Well, because they're allowed to actually focus on the important parts of education and not, you know,
when done well and when done appropriately,
right,
it works very, very well for some families. Then how do you prevent these cases? And there are others like it, where kids just disappear from the school system and everybody says, well, they're going to be homeschooled. I also have questions about the small town hospital.
But we can't rely on
that. With all these children were being born year after year after year after year, did no one think this is odd? There's 16 kids. 20 adults could not live in this space.
No.
Nor is there money for food for 20 adults.
Well, and let's be clear, having 16 kids in this size of a space is not illegal. Homeschooling your children is not illegal. Quite frankly, living in squalor is not illegal. It's to the level of squalor they were living in. It's the fact that they were probably, some of them, emaciated, not getting the nutrients that they need, fecal matter everywhere. Sam. That's where the neglect comes into play. But just because they were quote-unquote homeschooled, are we going to rely on the education system to make sure that every marker of our child is acceptable?
I don't know how we do it, but here's what I do know. The last grade that I think the father in this case remembers completing was eighth grade. We know that she became pregnant at age 15. I don't know when she stopped going to school.
Probably about that time.
When you look at someone who did not finish their education, that is not someone for whom, in my opinion, they should be leading education. And we know that they didn't. These kids were not schooled in any sense of the word.
But we do have a right to be dumb, to be uneducated. We can't have a government mandatory of that your kid turns six and they must be marched into one of our institutions.
No, I'm not saying we make it mandatory that anyone goes into a physical school. But I think there's an argument to be made. There has to be some check and balance.
Okay.
Even if it's one. 913-586-7798. We are going to welcome Kathy Nelson with President of Visit KC and the Sports Commission onto the program right after this break. Let's do a little postmortem on this phenomenal month that was the World Cup. And where do we go from here? We'll talk about that straight ahead.
Get the Dana and Parks podcast, KMBZ.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.